John Boot.
Right.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Paranexus Universe, everybody. This is your host, Doug Kelly, but tonight we have a special program with Brian Parsons as our host. Brian, you with me?
I'm here.
Cool.
Good evening, everyone.
Great. So I'm going to let you take it. We're getting our guest online.
All right. Tonight is Thursday, June 3rd, 2010. I'm excited to be the host tonight. Hopefully some of you may know who I am, and being the board member of Paranexus, and also have been a guest on the show previously, as well as on the panel discussion prior to all this, and my first night in here being the host. Tonight we have Jody Cook. If you've never heard of Jody Cook, he was on the Grassman episode of Monster Quest and other history, sci-fi, and learning channel shows. He's also the host of the Ohio Crypto Radio on the All Souls Paranormal Radio Network, which airs every Thursday evening at 8 o'clock and goes till 9 o'clock. So you have plenty of time to come over here to Paranexus Universe at 9 o'clock on Thursdays and join us. He is the founder of the Ohio Center for Bigfoot Studies and author of Bigfoot in Ohio, Quest for the Grassman, and Traces of the Grassman, The Search for the Ohio Bigfoot.
And Jody's with us now.
Hello, can you hear me?
Hey, Jody, welcome to the show.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, how are you?
Doing all right, doing real good. All right.
So,
can you hear a little better?
Yeah, I can hear you now. I'm just getting a lot of, not feedback, but I'm hearing my voice, so it's kind of throwing me off track here.
That'll dissipate in just a moment, Brian.
Okay, yeah, it's just really throwing me off. All right. Anyway, Jody, you and I met each other last year in August at the Ohio Paranormal Convention. I was a little thrown off by that because originally, I was supposed to be the only cryptid speaker at that event, and then I hear Jody Cook is going to be there, and I was a little intimidated, but you wanted me to call you, so we talked it over, and you gave me no fears. You were very down to earth. I was very excited to meet you, and I think we did a good job balancing the show down there, and then you invited me to your show on the Ohio Crypto Radio. I was excited to be your second guest and even beat the great Don Keating. And tonight, I want to repay the favor and have you on here tonight. So welcome to Paranexus Universe.
Oh, thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
So you're obviously in the cryptid field, but you didn't start there. Where did you start out at?
Actually, I was a UFO investigator. Here in Cincinnati, we had a group that was called ASK, which was Associate for Scientific Knowledge. And we had our own live television show on cable access. It was a live show we did every Wednesday night. And we talk about, you know, different stuff dealing with UFOs and stuff, and then we had, you know, where people could call in and things. So we were getting, you know, a lot of Bigfoot reports and stuff. So they asked if anybody wanted to handle the Bigfoot stuff. So myself and George Clapperson, who co-authored the first two books with me, decided, yeah, we'll go ahead and we'll do it. Thought it'd be interesting, and you know, really got into it really well. And basically, that's how we, you know, I started into the Bigfoot stuff. But I had my own sighting years before I even got into the Bigfoot stuff. So, and even when I had my sighting, that really didn't get me into the Bigfoot stuff, because I just thought that was really, I was blessed, you know, the actual seeing things. I always had interest in Bigfoot, you know, when I was younger and things, but mostly my biggest thing at the time was UFOs.
So what was your personal experience?
Well, I was in the Army, and we're up in Michigan at a military base called Camp Grayling. And basically what that is, it's a military post for U.S. and Canadian troops to do exercises together and stuff. And they've always had reports of, you know, Bigfoot up in that area, a lot of UFO reports, you know, in that area. And we were coming from the range one night, getting back to the ASP, which is the Animal Supply Point. And it was about 8:30 in the evening. And we went down, we went off road to get there a little bit quicker. And when we went down to this hillside, and the trees were starting to get really thick. So what we did, we ended up stopping. And I was in the front seat. I had a driver, and there's two other privates behind me, and sitting in the back seat. So when we, you know, stopped the vehicle and we turned the vehicle to, you know, go back up the hill, because obviously we couldn't go through the wood line, that's when it moved. We saw it. I mean, as we were coming down, we didn't even see it. And this thing was right in front of us, and he blended in so well with the tree line. And so what happened was he ended up moving, so we all made eye contact with him. And I mean, to this day, it burnt into my head of what this thing. I've never seen anything like this before. And every time I see a gorilla, I mean, it's like it's nothing what a gorilla, you know, would look like. It was very, very, the face is very human, is the only way I can describe it. The nose was very human. More Caucasian, not, I can't say more Caucasian, it's more flat, you know, not so much like a gorilla's nose. He was an older, he was a male, he was much older, because have you ever seen a dog or a coyote with mange? That's what he looked like. I mean, you know, it's just, it's like up on his upper shoulders and his head, you know, and part of the chest, you know, the hair was like kind of mange looking there. And he, you know, deep black eyes, just, I mean, it, you just, I can't describe it other than it was like a hypnotized, because when you looked in his eyes, it's just, you know, you were just focused there, you know.
Right. So interestingly, was there any report given? Obviously, this has happened on a military base and military people all around.
No. Because two captains, like two or maybe 3 days prior, you know, to our sighting, two captains actually seen it, and they really gave these captains all kinds of heck. You know, for coming forward saying that, you know, so we decided, you know, we're not going to say nothing. We didn't say nothing to anybody. And I didn't even tell this story to anyone for probably 10 years, you know, because I kept it to myself. I mean, I just, you know, it's one of these things where, you know, you take, you know, some of these researchers, you know, that's been in the field for 30, 40 years, you know, like Rene DeHinden and some of the, you know, Peter Burns and some of those guys that were doing it all their life and never seen anything. And then when you have a researcher that says, oh, yeah, I've seen it, it's, you know, it's kind of hard to take in, you know, and stuff, because you have to look at yourself. Are you a witness or are you a researcher? And a lot of researchers, they don't want to sit there and take themselves from being a researcher to a witness, if you understand what I'm saying, you know.
Yeah.
And things, it was just something. I mean, when we got back up on the road, I mean, no one said anything to anyone for probably about 15 minutes till we got into the Katoman area. Got to the ASP, dropped the stuff off, got in the vehicle, and went back. And then, you know, one of the privates sat there and said, you know, what are we going to do about this? And, you know, I just basically said, we're not going to do nothing about it. We're just going to, you know, keep our mouths shut, because, you know, you don't, in the military, you don't say you see UFOs and you don't say you see Bigfoot and things like that, okay, because stuff sticks with you, you know. And
right.
Things, especially when it's time going up for promotions and stuff like that. So, and the thing of it is, I mean, Camp Grayling is really well known for, you know, a lot of weird stuff going on up there. I mean, like the year prior to that, I was a 19 Delta, which was a cavalry scout, and we were going into transition to become Kilos, which were tankers. And we had M1, you know, tanks on the range, and we were doing live fire. And they told everybody to get out of the tanks, and they pulled everybody into a building. And, you know, just told everybody just to stay still, don't do nothing, just stay in the building. So we didn't know what was going on. And the range was, you know, real below, you know, into a quarry area. And, like, the roadway and everything was, like, you know, probably about 35, 40, maybe 50 feet up from us where we were going the opposite way. And they said, well, you know, the live firing was disrupting communications with the shuttle. Okay, and that was the Army's view of that. So the next day, the newspaper said, you know, massive UFO sightings. That, you know, and the Air Force was even called out, you know, to look at the bogeys and stuff. So, and then we found out, for one, the shuttle wasn't up at the time. So, and two, us firing our, you know, live ammunition is not going to disrupt communications with the shuttle. Only thing I can think of that they knew they were in the area and they didn't want anything hostile, so they pulled everybody out. You know, so yeah, there's a lot of weird stuff like that that goes on up in that area. I mean, it's a really hotbed for, you know, a lot of stuff. And, you know, they've always had UFO and Bigfoot sightings in that area. So
let's talk about Grassman. A lot of people aren't really familiar with the term Grassman.
The Grassman name is you know, the Ohio Bigfoot, and the name actually comes from the northern part of the state, and a lot of people in the area, that's what they called it. You know, they knew it as a kid, they knew it when their father was a kid. It goes all the way down to where actually the Native Americans had the Shawnee, the Cherokee, I think the Blackfeet were in Ohio, in the Delaware, and some Huron. Or Huron was down here, and they all either had a name for it, either the Grassman or the Bojessman was the name. And the Bojessman name basically comes from what the Native Americans called the African slaves, because they knew they were bushmen and hunters. So, and that's how the Bojessman came from, the word bushman. And that's the only way they can describe it, the creature, to, you know, the Bushman, you know, because of the color of the skin, the hair type, and things like that. And it wasn't nothing disrespectful to the African American, you know, slaves or anything. It's just, you know, the Native Americans, they only have so many words for certain things, and when they do their descriptions on things. So you just have to basically take it, and it's not an insult. But the Grassman, because of the large grassy areas that's in Ohio, because Ohio is mostly all, you know, a lot of farmland,
right.
And I mean, especially, you know, because, you know, because when the glaciers basically stopped a little bit north of Columbus, it's all flatland up there, a lot of grassland, and so that's how the name came about. It was just something that goes all the way back to like the 1830s.
So other than your personal experiences, what case would you say gave you the most definitive evidence you've ever gotten?
Oh, God. There was there was a couple of them. I can't say there's just one of them. If I had to choose one, I would probably say the handprint that came out of Adams County, Deputy Rome, because that was looked at by the FBI, by Jimmy Chilcutt, who is probably the only expert on primate fingerprints in the world. And so Jimmy looked at it, and he came to the conclusion that it was made from an actual hand. It wasn't made from a mole. It wasn't made from a casting or anything. It was actually made by an actual hand. And that the dermal ridges in the hand and the fingers matched up similar to a gorilla, but not so much a gorilla, not so much human, but it was just something, there were some different characteristics that were in there. And he honestly believes that that's what it probably is a Bigfoot handprint, you know. But on the other hand, here in Ohio, I don't know if you know about this. You probably do, because I think you and I talked about this, about the exotic animal trade that goes on in Ohio here. And it's, you know, you can own a gorilla. You can own, you know, a lot of exotic animals. I mean, there's a legal trade going on in Ohio, and there's legal trade. And the possibility of, you know, someone having a pet gorilla and got out, I mean, I wouldn't discount it, you know, here in Ohio, because, you know, like I said, there's people that actually own them. So, like the one that was owned, that the Cincinnati Zoo got, you know, actually lived with, you know, was owned by two people here, and they had it for 22 years before they gave it to the zoo, you know. So, I mean, anything's possible. But that one, as far as evidence, I would say that one, and one of the cases that really sticks out of my mind, back in 98, there was an older couple right there on the border of Adams and Scioto County. And this woman, I think she was 78, and her husband was 81. And he was real bad off, had emphysema, and was on oxygen and stuff. And she called the sheriff's department saying that, you know, there's gorillas out in the cornfield. And she says, I see them every day. And, you know, they're putting corn and small rodents and, you know, flowers and stuff like that, you know, edible flowers and stuff on the windowsill of their home. And, I mean, this lady was scared, and she called the sheriff's department, and the sheriff's department basically laughed her off, so they told her to call the Cincinnati Zoo to see if any gorillas was missing. And they were actually, you know, they really really gave this lady a really hard time. So, you know, she called the zoo. The zoo, you know, said, no, all of our gorillas are accounted for and stuff. So she called the sheriff's department back, and sheriff's department says, you know, call this guy. Because what I did was I took a basic letter, and I sent it off to all 88 counties, sheriff's departments in Ohio, basically saying, if you get a report of any type of Bigfoot sighting, don't laugh it off, don't throw it away, send it my way, let me investigate it. And it actually worked, because that's how I was getting a lot of my stuff. And so I went out there, and, you know, we're in the house, and she's showing me out in the window where the cornfield was, and, you know, and what they were basically doing was they were bringing her food, her and her husband food. And I told her, I said, I don't think they're here to hurt you. I think they know that you're an elderly couple and they're taking care of you. I would, you know, because they weren't doing anything. They weren't beating on the house. They weren't going through her garbage. And, I mean, she was scared. She was terrified. And I told her, I said, they're not going to hurt you. I really think what they're doing was they felt that they were an older couple and they were there to provide for them. And they were, like I said, they were putting corn and, you know, field mice, squirrels, you know, stuff like that on the windowsill, you know, radishes, things like that. You know, and to me, it was an offering, you know. So, and they were really, she was really terrified, you know. But she ended up going, moving out with a family member. But it that was one of the biggest things I think that really stayed in my mind was that one right there, you know.
Right.
Because, you know, there's so many people out there faking stuff and just you know, fooling people and things like that. But, you know, when you can really tell if someone's feeding you a line or someone giving you the truth of what they really believe. And this is one of these things. These people had nothing to gain. You know, I mean, they weren't that wealthy. They wanted nothing in return, you know. So that was, I would say that was one of the biggest ones I really, you know, stayed in my mind was that one there. So
I got a question here in the chat room here about Stan Gordon reported that a woman found a Bigfoot rummaging through something on her porch, and the woman shot at it, but the Bigfoot disappeared in a burst of light. Have you ever heard anything about this?
You know, here's the thing. I don't believe in the supernatural with Bigfoot. I don't believe there's a Bigfoot UFO connection. I don't believe there's a supernatural Bigfoot connection. Okay, this is a creature that's flesh and blood. Okay, and where they people say they appear, they disappear. You know, tracks, you know, go to some point and then the tracks are gone. But you know, Native Americans did that. They always backtrack. You know, in their same footprints and stuff. And you know, I don't take that stuff for a grain of salt. To be honest with you, I won't even look at anything that has any Bigfoot sighting that deals with the supernatural and that deals with UFOs, because I don't think there's a connection there at all. And believe me, I've been out in the woods with this one particular woman that, you know, swears these things appear and disappear and, you know, and all this stuff. And well, I didn't know it at the time I went out there, you know, and then, you know, she, you know, you hear something walking across the creek and she goes, oh, there it is, walking across the creek. He'll just wait a minute, he'll appear in a minute, you know, and stuff. And it's like, oh my God. You know, so no, I don't think there's, I don't even touch that stuff, to be honest with you.
So. All right, for anyone listening in, if you want to call in, our number is 347-945-7799. It's at the top of the screen there. Or if you're in the chat room, you have a question for Jody, a question about Grassman or Bigfoot, ask away. So let's talk about the Monster Quest episode. Pretty popular episode. I think it was one of their most popular episodes, actually.
Actually, it still is rated the number one Monster Quest show. You know, the thing of it is, Monster Quest is, you know, taken off the air.
Right.
And they blew it. I don't have another way to put it, but they blew it. They had the opportunity to do so much different stuff, and they decided to do stuff, you know, about, you know, dogs and killer piranhas and, you know, pigs and stuff like people. I mean, they don't, that's not monster stuff. You know what
right.
I'm saying? And, you know, and they blew it, and they knew they blew it. And the History Channel basically told them, you know, hey, if you're going to continue doing this, one, it has to be in the United States, and two, you want something that's going to scare the hell out of people. You know, in Monster Quest, oh no, we can do this. We can, and it's like it blew it. You know, so.
Yeah.
It's still rated the number one show, and you know, we had fun doing it and things. There's a lot of stuff I disagreed with it. You know, the way they did it and things. You know, especially when it talks about the baboon skull.
Right.
Because I talked about about the illegal animal trade. And the exotic animal trade that's going on, and that's probably where the skull came from. So they decided, no, it makes more interesting if people think there's baboons in Ohio, okay? Because I had two police reports from two different parts of the state by, you know, deputies that seen baboons, you know, and you know, going across the road. And, you know, there's two animal our primate research centers in Ohio. And I know one of them caught on fire and a bunch of monkeys got out. And so, I mean, that's probably how they're here, you know, but Monster Quest didn't want to throw that in. So, of course, it made me look like an idiot, you know, and stuff. And the plus the part with the helicopter, you know, which was a real kind of tooed me off because Don kind of did that behind my back. Because the last day of filming, you know, they said, well, you know, we're done here. We're just going to spend another day, you know, to do some other stuff. And then, you know, after I'm gone, they decide, okay, they're going to go ahead and do the helicopter thing, you know, which I, you know, but I don't hold nothing against Don, you know, for that, because, you know, I tell you, if I had the opportunity to do it, I probably would have done it too. And I don't think Don actually knew about it until after I left anyhow. So, but there were just a lot of different things I felt, you know, that could have been done with that show a lot better. And then they were talking about doing the second show, and then, you know, they get canceled. So they're coming out with something a little bit different, I think, called Mysterious America, similar to that. But, you know, I've been talking with them about doing some type of a called, well, they came up with the name Crypto Academy. And so they're looking at me and Ken Gerhardt, and I think there's another researcher that they're looking at on possibly doing the doing this with. And basically what it is, you know, going to be similar to Ghost Academy, but we're taking people out to the field to teach them how to be cryptozoologists and deal with different cryptid animals and stuff like that. But it's, I don't think it's going to be to the point where we're going to start kicking people off the show type thing. So that's something that's kind of like in the, you know, that's in the world. We're getting ready for the website.
We're
going to
cover stuff up.
Huh?
Doug, I think technical difficulties. I'm not sure if you are. Hello, Jody. I sure.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now. And while we're while I get Brian back, if you want to double check your mic, make sure your headset mic is the one that's being used. Sorry, folks, I had some echo from you. Sounds like I know Brian was having some internet, so I'll keep trying to get him on. But while I'm doing that, I'll just carry on the questioning. There is a question in the chat room. Please ask Jody if he has seen any interesting photos lately.
Not, right now I'm working on, I do other crypto stuff other than the Bigfoot, but nothing as far as the Bigfoot, but we're getting a large amount of called werewolf sightings in the northern part of the state, and I've got two photos of footprints that were kind of interesting because they're very human, but they have claw marks in them. Kind of neat looking. And I actually got the drawing that the ranger who was closing up the park, you know, he saw this thing. He thought it was a dog because it was kneeled down at the time off to his left. And then when he got in the vehicle to turn around, the light hit it, it stood up and walked away. And he, you know, described it as a, you know, like a German Shepherd or something, you know, and stuff, and things. So I got the drawing and stuff of what he saw, but we found, you know, two footprints next to it. And they're kind of interesting, but as far as the Bigfoot stuff, I haven't really been out to the field too much because I'm working on two books right now. That's where all my, you know, research stuff is going to. Right now is the
two. Well, all the times we see these photographs all over the internet, and majority of the time they're either mistaken identity or somebody just fabricating something, and that's really unfortunate for the field.
Oh, I mean, this is this field. Everyone make a bar. It's like, which was excellent conference. Say like 750 people showed up there. And it worked out really well for Don. But see, Salt Fork, they see money in the Bigfoot. So now they got these Bigfoot T-shirts, Bigfoot hats. They even got these stuffed little Bigfoot dolls, which are kind of neat. They look like the Jack Lynx Bigfoot. And, you know, they have like a little coloring book for kids on Bigfoot. You know, and they have a Bigfoot costume, which they got this idiot running out in the field. No one shoots them, you know, but they see money there, and it's getting crazy out there. Absolutely crazy.
Yeah, it's a shame. I mean, it's really happening everywhere with the ghost field, with cryptozoology. Everyone's trying to provide proof, and their proof nine times out of ten is just a fabrication. They just want to convince people.
Well, the thing, I mean, like in the paranormal field, is that there's so much stuff out there. I mean, every major station, Discovery Channel, History Channel, Sci-Fi Channel, Learning Channel, Animal Planet, they all got paranormal stuff on it. It's all the same crap, and that's why, you got, so many different stations right now. But I've been in contact with three major networks about, about doing types of crypto shows that they, because everybody's burnt out on the ghost stuff. And there's so much stuff out there that can be, because it's the same stuff. I mean, we watch, Ghost Hunters, to Ghost Adventures, and Haunted. I mean, it's all the same stuff. They all investigated the same area. It's the same stuff that they're getting, and people are getting bored and burnt out. And so that's why, it's like Paranormal State's getting taken off the air because they're faking their stuff, and they just got busted. Ghost Hunters, they got busted for faking stuff, Sci-Fi's ready to pull them off the air because, because everybody's trying to get the ratings up, and they're faking stuff just to do it,
Yeah, that's unfortunate that there's, it's all about entertainment with these shows, but, you had UFO Hunters and you had Monster Quest that really, they try to put together, a good objective investigation. And if they got something, they got something. If they didn't, they didn't. And they showed you the evidence and let you weigh it yourself, which is a shame that we don't have that in the ghost field.
Yeah, I mean, like UFO Hunters, that was a good show. People loved it. But MUFON, who's basically under control of the CIA now because all their top people in MUFON are former CIA people. And they really got that show taken off the air. I mean, and stuff. And I mean, you can't even trust MUFON anymore. I mean, MUFON literally threw away all these files and original photographs and stuff. I mean, it was totally irresponsible what they did. And they were throwing this stuff away, and people were going in the dumpsters getting it. And this is at the MUFON headquarters, and it just goes to show that, they're trying to stop the truth, and that's why, all the top people and even the STAR team, all those people are former, CIA and intelligence people. So, and the thing, in the Bigfoot field, thank God we don't have, nobody out there trying to stop that, and even, you take like Obama, the president, he even has money out there for researchers who want to get funding and grants for paranormal research and stuff like that. But it's just, the paperwork is just phenomenal. It takes you a year just to fill the paperwork out, just to get the grant money. But it's there, because he really believes in, Bigfoot and ghosts and stuff like that. So that's why the money's there for people like us that want to go apply for it. But like you said, it's not worth it because, taking all that time and, filling out the paperwork.
Right. So I have a question in the chat room asking if you plan to be in the field very much in the future.
Oh, yeah. What I was saying before we got cut off is Ken Gerhardt and myself and Ginger Bertline, which is a researcher here in Cincinnati, and there's two other people that are going to get involved with this. We're working on the website now, and it's getting ready to come up, and it's called Cryptid Seekers. And basically what it is that if anybody wanted to go out and to do an investigation, we're going to do it in different parts of the country to teach you how to, work with physical evidence, the different type of research that's done. I mean, because the Bigfoot stuff is a lot different from the paranormal stuff. And, how to deal with that stuff, how to do investigations, you know, the type of equipment and stuff they use, and we're going to do that. And we're not going to charge people to go. Only thing we ask is that you just, if you want to be here for that, you just provide your way to get there, you know, and things. And so we're going to start doing that. And that's probably, we're going to start doing that here, hopefully within the next month to 2 months. The website will be up. It's www.cryptidseekers.com. And like I said, it's going to be a really, really good thing once we get it started. It's going to be a lot different from what the BFRO was doing because, like you said, we're not going to charge people to go. Only thing, like you said, if we're doing something in Ohio or we're doing something in Tennessee or Florida or something, if you want to be a part of it, that's fine. Just find your way down here and be a part of it, you know, and things. And it's going to be interesting. And Ken's actually doing one here that I'm not going to be able to go on, but he's, you know, doing one as just of an exercise. And, I mean, he's got 27 people already signed up for it, you know. So
I always thought it was interesting how the BFRO wants to charge $600, $700 to go camping with 20 other people.
Well, the thing of it is, I mean, with the BFRO, you know, they're going on public land, and he's charging all this money to go on public land. You know, and the thing of it is that, you know, they get a lot of evidence. And I find that, you know, very, very odd that they're getting evidence every time they go out. You know, I mean, they did one right outside of Saltport when I was with the American Bigfoot Society. And they even got some of my pooping sounds as evidence, the sounds that I made. Huh. You know, that they have as evidence, you know, and I'm saying it's me doing it. Oh, no, it's not. Yes, it is, you know, because I got the times that we were doing it and it coincides with what you've got. So, you know, that's the kind of stuff you deal with. So, but like I said, this is going to work out really well. And this is kind of be like, you know, if the show gets off the ground, this is how it's going to be and how it's going to be done. So it's going to work out real good. But, like I said, I'm also working on two books. I'm working on one called The Beginner's Field Guide to Bigfoot Research. And it basically tells you everything you need to know to be a cryptozoologist investigator. And it's a lot, like I said, it's a lot different from what people in the paranormal field does. Because we use things different. We think of things different. And that's going to be a really good, I mean, there's so much stuff I'm putting in. It's going to be a pretty good sized book when it's done. And the second book that I'm working on with Ginger Bertline is called Buckeye Monsters, and it's about all the cryptid stuff in Ohio. You know, all the different type of creatures, the werewolf sightings, Bigfoot, you know, the Mothman, the Charles Mill Lake Monster, Betsy, Loveland Frog, things like that. And the artwork is going to be, you know, Ginger's doing the artwork, and it's phenomenal. It's going to be a really good book when it comes out.
Oh, I'm looking forward to that one.
That will probably be out in about 2.5 months and stuff. But like I said, the other one I'm still in the process of still doing. So
what current investigations are you doing right now? You have anything that you're looking at?
Yeah, we're looking at a particular area up in Ohio, middle part of Ohio. I don't want to give the area away right now because there's a lot going on up there. And even, I mean, I was contacted by the Rangers that actually seen them on more than one occasion. And he actually got my book, and that's how he saw the Monster Quest. He goes, I'm going to call this guy, talk to him. So he was telling me about, you know, the sighting that he had up there, and he told me exactly where it is. And so we're going to go up there and do the investigation. We're gonna have some thermal imaging cameras that's going to be set up out there, and, you know, some live feed. We're going to try and do a live feed, you know, that night also, so people can get onto a certain website to watch the live feed. And so we're doing that right now. We're going to be up there probably about 2 weeks. But I'm doing a not this weekend, but the following weekend, I'm doing a Mothman investigation here in Ohio. That'll be going on in about a week. So, but like I said, I'm starting to do a lot of the other crypto stuff. I mean, I for 18 years, I've done strictly Bigfoot, you know, and there's just so much other stuff going on in Ohio. And, you know, I'm checking some of it out.
So what's your take on the, I know we were talking about this before, something, we had some audio problems, about the cougar cover-up here in Ohio.
Oh, yeah. You know what, it's where, I mean, the Division Wildlife, I don't know what their problem is. You know, they know the cougars are here. I mean, there was a buddy of mine in Brown County got a photo of a, you know, of a cougar that ran across one of his cameras where it's carrying a buck in its mouth, you know, and it went right across the camera, and the Division of Wildlife called him a liar, you know, and I think a lot, and it comes through the Bigfoot stuff too. I really think it's all because of money, and
right.
You know, because they have to take money from one area to push it to this area, and they don't want to do it. And plus, you know, they don't want people to know that they're cougar in Ohio, because, you know, idiots are going to go out and try and kill it. So that means they're going to have to put money towards protecting it. And it's just, you know, I think it's a money issue. But it's the same thing with bears. You know, the Division of Wildlife did not confirm that they were bear in Ohio until, I think it was 2001 or 2002, is when they confirmed that bear was in Ohio. Okay. And it from 1980 time, yes, bears in Ohio, 48 counties in Ohio. You know, so, and that, you know, that's another thing. While it's on a no hunt list in Ohio until, you know, they get more populated and start going killing more, you know, livestock and people's dogs, and, you know, kill somebody, and then, you know, they're going to eventually have to do something.
Right. See, I think that's interesting there, because deer were extinct in Ohio, what, about 100 years ago, and we restocked that through restocking programs in natural ways, and then now the bears are coming back, so all these animals are coming back, so to me it makes sense that eventually cougars are going to be here, and if you can prove a cougar is here, you know, a six-foot-long creature, then I think that gives some credence to Bigfoot.
Well, the thing of it is, it's, you know, the deer population getting so big in Ohio, I mean, it's massive than any other state, you know, in the union. And that's why the bears, when the bears would migrate to Pennsylvania, come down to Ohio, go to West Virginia, and then they would migrate back up. Well, the roadkill and the deer population, so much the food's here, so they stayed. And I think that's what happened when the cougars are migrating. The cougars end up staying because the food source was here. And animals are going to go where the food source is, and they're going to stay where the food source is until the food source is gone, and then they'll move on, you know. And the fact that, you know, heck, they had on a few months ago, a elk got hit off of 71 here in Ohio.
Oh,
and
wow.
Division Wildlife came, picked that animal up, and took it off. You know, most of the time a deer gets hit on the highway and it stays. You know,
probably.
They went and picked that one up. And it's like, you know, well, we don't have elk in Ohio. It could have, it was probably on somebody's private range where they go hunting animals and stuff. You know, well, you know, the thing of it is, you know, animals migrate. And like I said, they're going to go where the food source is. And, if they move further out from where they're supposed to be, they're going to go, you know. And I'm back. They're seeing them in Kentucky, you know, elk in Kentucky.
Yeah, I do know in Northwest Pennsylvania they've done a restocking program of elk, and that's about from where I'm sitting now is about 2.5-hour drive.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, so, you know, animals, you know, there's no if there's not a fence there, you know. Animals are going to go, you know, and stuff. So they're going to go, like I said, with the food sources. I mean, Ohio, I mean, my God, Ohio is a farming state. The food source is in abundance here in Ohio. That's why the deer's are getting so populated because all the farmland and all the crops, you know, that's out here, and the red, you know, vegetation stuff. That's why the deers are here.
Right.
You know, something like Bigfoot could stay here because, you know, the food source is abundance in Ohio. You know, I mean, they're even starting to see, you know, the coyotes are getting more populated now. You know, they're even talking about they're even seeing wolves in Ohio. And, you know, like I said, you know, yeah, they're passing in Ohio that has wolves, you know, that's in caged areas and stuff like that where you can go see them and things. But, you know, animals get out and, you know, they're going to, like I said, they're going to go find the food source. So,
right, and that's another animal that competes directly with the cougar. And if one's spreading, the other's going to spread too to kind of avoid each other. So I think that's going on that people would admit.
Well, the thing though is that it's like, you know, a cougars won't back down. I mean, they won't even back down to a bear. You know, when it comes to food. You know, they'll stay on the ground. Normally, a cougar will get the food, and the bear's going to go off because, you know, a cougar can do a lot more damage to a bear than a bear can do to a cougar. And it's like, you know, in Alaska, in certain parts of Canada, you know, certain areas, because the food source is not there, the grizzlies are digging up the black bears who are in hibernation and eating the black bears, because of the food source. You know, is gone, and they're finding that out. That you know, that's what the grizzlies are doing. And they're basically killing off a lot of the black bear up in that area. You know, because they're eating the black bears, because it's a lot weaker and smaller. But on the other hand, too, I was talking with a friend of mine who works for a natural resource facility or government, more or less, a state government, and she was telling me they're finding bears with their chest and their chest crushed and the backbones snapped. You know, black bear and grizzlies, and they don't know what's doing it because when bears fight, they normally don't crush each other's chest and backbone where something grabbed it and crushed it. And we're talking, you know, 1,200-pound grizzly bears, their chests are, you know, crushed and their backs are broke. So, I mean, they don't even know what's even doing that. And, you know, the reason why she mentioned it to me was she thought maybe the possibility of you think it might be a Bigfoot doing it. You know, and I told her, I said, you know, I really believe that. Because, I mean, he's dominant enough, he can do that. He can crush their, you know, he can do that. And, I mean, this is not going on in one particular state. This is going on in a couple different, you know, bordering states that they're finding these bears like this. So,
what do you think about the stereotype about the Eastern Bigfoot being more aggressive versus the Western?
Well, I think that's true. You know, the Eastern Bigfoot's not as big. He's more aggressive than the Western Bigfoot is, which is a much larger creature, and he's more docile, I think, more shy. I mean, if you look at any type of reported attack by Bigfoot, it's all been on the East Coast, okay, other than Native American folklore. Okay, which goes all across the country. It's like the situation with Fred Beck, you know, up there in Ape Canyon. You know, I've got Fred Beck's book. I read a lot of his, you know, I got copies of all of his original notes and stuff. And I'll be honest with you, I think that's the biggest crock of crap. I think those guys made it up. Because I've actually seen pictures of the cabin. You know, that were taken after the attack, and there's no way that these things were throwing big boulders and not doing hardly any damage to that cabin. You know, it looked like it was, you know, untouched. And I think what it was is that these guys, you know, they found gold and they wanted to keep people out of that area, so they made this story up, and it worked. You know, and I because nothing really adds up in that story. You know, I mean, if these things are throwing boulders and crushing in the roofs, and, you know, they're shooting through the roofs and the doors and stuff, and, you know, the photographs I've seen of, you know, of the actual cabin, I mean, I didn't see no bullet holes, let alone, you know, the roof were large rocks. I mean, there were some rocks on top of the roof, but they weren't big enough to do anything. You know, and... But, you know, who's to say? What was your original question on that?
I don't remember. have you seen, I know there was in the Monster Quest episode, you guys built a structure out there that somebody had reported to you. I remember you telling me that story, but have you seen any other structures in and around Ohio or elsewhere that were built?
The first one we found, the Kenmore structure, we found, and then a few years later, we found two more that we thought were possibility. But, I mean, that structure I built for the Monster Quest, it's still standing. It's still there.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's still there. And I tell you what, you know, there must be four or five structures up there at Salt Fork right now, you know. And ever since that episode came out with the structure, everybody's finding structures. So, you know, and it, to me, it's, you know, a lot of this stuff with the structures is all man-made stuff. You know, because it's something new, people found out about it, and it's, hey, let's do it. You know, let's do the evidence. So, but, you know, I haven't really found, you know, too much. I mean, I go out, when I go out to the areas, I look for it and stuff. I mean, I found one that I thought maybe could possibly be one, but the entranceway was just too small for something to get in. But I haven't really found anything that I can honestly say I believe that's what it might be. So
what kind of, when you're actually doing a physical investigation, what type of evidence do you collect that's physical?
Well, I mean, you know, what I look for, you know, is possible hair samples, which you're not going to always find. You know, a lot of time when you find a footprint, you will find, you know, some hair there. I look for any type of where the area that which it was going through, you know, the broken vegetation, you know, grass being, you know, pounded down. You know, you look for signs like that. You look for any other tracks also of other animals going through the area, you know, deer tracks, you know, or coyote tracks, or even, you know, domestic dog or something. You look for different types of, other evidence that's there. But, you know, what you really try to get is any type of physical evidence, like, you know, hair samples. Like one we got was, there was a Quaker minister that was plowing his field, and he noticed there was something on the inside of the fence watching him, and he described it as a gorilla. And it went over the fence, but it got its leg caught, and it took a big chunk of flesh off with the hair, and we actually got that and sent it to Ohio State University, and it came back as an unknown species of primate. But there's a famous or very well-known doctor that has that sample that he says it's his. And then he says, well, I can't find it.
Oh.
You know, so he got, he basically got the recognition for it, and it was ours. You know, mine and George. Thank God we had the actual photographs of it, you know, and the lab took photographs of it, and we got those. But, you know, that's the kind of stuff we look for when we're out. You know, just basically to see if there's any other type of animal that could have made those tracks and things. You got to be 80% skeptic when you go out. You know, you do anymore. You have to sit there and think to yourself, whatever I find, if I had to present it in a court of law, could I persuade a juror with what I've got?
Right.
You know, and you have to really be careful in what you find. You know, because it's like, you know, you take all the Bigfoot physical evidence that's out there, all the paranormal physical evidence. Man, there's people on death row right now that's going to be, killed on, for less circumstantial evidence than what there is of Bigfoot, ghosts, and UFOs. You can sit there and say, put someone to death by, an eyewitness. But when you put an eyewitness about a UFO or Bigfoot, it gets laughed off. But you sure the hell put someone to death over it, And that's the problem with mainstream science. Mainstream science will never, ever accept, the existence of Bigfoot. If a body's ever found, they're not going to say it's a Bigfoot. They're going to come up and say it's something other than a Bigfoot because mainstream science is not going to be proven wrong. And that's why I'm saying, it'll never happen. I don't care if you got a body or not. They're going to come up saying something different than what it is.
Right. So your website is OC4BFS.com. That's the Ohio Center for Bigfoot Studies.
Yep. That's the
website. And your show is on Thursdays at 8, which again is a good time for people to come back here.
Yes.
In the Paranexus Universe after that.
Yes.
It's on ASPRN.com. That's.
Yeah, All Souls Paranormal Radio Network. The last couple of weeks, we didn't have a show because there were some difficulties that were going on and things. And so the last couple of weeks, we didn't have a show, but we're going to, next week, we're starting back, fresh and things. And we've got some good stuff coming up here real soon, And, we basically talk about different paranormal stuff that deals with our cryptid stuff that deals in Ohio and even different parts of the country. So, and it's a little bit different, gives people somewhat of a break from the paranormal stuff.
Right. So I want to thank you for coming on tonight.
If anybody has any questions, my email is oc4bfs@hotmail.com, which is the Ohio Center for Bigfoot Studies. @hotmail.com. So, if anybody has any questions, feel free to send me an email and things. And my new book, they can get it through publishamerica.com. They can get the book through there now, The Traces of the Grassman. And then, like I said, in about 2 months, the Buckeye Monsters will be out. And then hopefully by next year, early next year, my new one, The Beginner Field Guide, will be out. And stuff, because there's that's a whole different show, that dealing with that book. There's just so much stuff, on that. So, but feel free to have me on anytime. That'd be great.
Certainly. And next week on Paranexus Universe, June 10th, 2010, at 9 p.m., we're going to have Orbs, Infrasound, and EVP with guest Steve Parsons. Now, there's no relation there. He's a researcher from the United Kingdom. Well, I don't know. There could be relation. I don't know. But I'll have to tune in and find out. But again, Jody, thank you for coming out here.
Hey, no problem, buddy.
I'm glad I could repay the favor, and I thank you for having me on your show.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it. And so, anytime, just get back with me. And so you have a good night, and I hope everything works out for you. Come up on your shows there.
All right. Yeah, we'll have to hook up sometime and do some investigations together too.
Oh yeah, definitely. I'll be up towards your way here in about a month and stuff. I'll get in touch with you. Things, because we're going to be doing some of that werewolf stuff. All right, buddy. You have a good night.
All right.
You take
thank
care.
You, Jody, and thank you everybody in the chat room for listening in and dealing with all of the technical difficulties that we've had.
Yeah. All right, buddy. You have a good night.
All right. Thank you, Jody.
All right. Take care, buddy. Bye.
Good night.
shadows. In the sky, it's Paranexus Universe.